thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. You can listen to this program and many other wonderful programs if you're in the Sacramento area at 96.5 FM. And if you're just joining us, we're listening to the Foundations of Modern Terrorism.
Terrorism has been a part of the American experience since our birth, hasn't it?
Even before that. Another example of that, if I, and I hope this is what you're asking about, is the episode euphemistically referred to as the Native American removal, which actually has its origins prior to the Revolutionary War, but in a sense flowers in the 1830s and 1840s under President Jackson. And that, too, is an episode, I think, of extraordinary proportions, which indicates terrorism in a democracy. And again, I hasten to add, I'm talking about registers of this phenomenon. I'm not making comparisons from one terrible regime to that which our country has involved itself in. But, again, the evidence is so clear. Families whose homes were there and whose land was seen as sacred and had been there for perhaps centuries were ripped out of their homes, violently treated, and ordered to walk across the entire continent through several seasons of horrible weather to a place that meant nothing to them in the West. And the origins of that go back to the involvement of Native Americans with the British during the Revolutionary War. It's a very complicated story.
What's this photograph on the cover of your book?
That's an interesting question because it gets back to a small dispute I had with my editor at Cambridge Press at the time when we were searching for an appropriate photograph. He found that, and I thought it was a great idea finally. It is a scene from what's known in Ireland as the Troubles during the 1960s. We couldn't pin down the exact date. We did get permission for it because we found where it had been reproduced. But it's an incredible scene which strikes me as something that you can't not want to understand why this happened, how these children can be standing in front of this carnage.
Given the long history of the Irish-English conflict of the 60s and 70s, I mean, how could it have been prevented? How could it have been stopped?
That is the perhaps the longest of all of the terrorism situations that I'm talking about. It's political violence that engages all three sides. Sometimes it's only two, but in this case it's all three sides because we have Catholics, Protestants, and the British government. And the story goes back hundreds of years, as you know. How could it have been stopped? The only answer I'd like to give, and I think it's something that we need to pay more attention to, is the way it was stopped by the intervention of then-Senator George Mitchell with the Good Friday Accords of 1998 that finally, at least it's held since that time, which is remarkable, and it's a story that really needs to be told because diplomacy works. Words work. One of the things I say at the very end of this book is that I hope that by revealing all this information and by people knowing about it, that we'll try and find ways to negotiate and to speak instead of doing violent acts in order to achieve the same ends. That's what happened in the Irish situation at the end of the 1990s. And it's a moment I think we all need to pay more attention to as to how it was done, how Mitchell managed that.
Has the U.S. presence in Afghanistan cut down on terrorism?
Again, because it's a contemporary question, I can't make predictions, but I shudder to think about the damage that we've done whenever I do realize what has happened since 9/11 with regard to Iraq and Afghanistan. I'm worried about it, yes. I think we have created more problems than we may have solved, but that's a guess.
1920, Wall Street, bombed. Who did it? Why did they do it? What was the response?
Well, before there were Islamic militants and before there were communists, there were anarchists. So if we go back to the end of the 19th and beginning of the 20th centuries, the enemy du jour, as I like to say, the enemy of the day, were the anarchists. There was an anarchist named Galliani, who was an Italian who had come to this country. Immigration, by the way, in those days was before the First World War was very open. If you got here, you basically were in. A number of Italians did form anarchist organizations. Galliani's group was a violent one, which was the minority, by the way. Most of the anarchists were not violent at all, but they were targeted as such. And this was an attempt to pick as anarchists and communists and Islamic militants and governments all the way through have always done symbolic targets. 9/11 is all about symbols. And every terrorist act that I know about is not just an act, it's a purpose behind it that has a symbolic representation. So what better example of attacking capitalism, if you in fact are an anarchist socialist, as Galliani and his group were, than choosing Wall Street as your symbolic target? And it was seen at the time as a horrendous act, even though the statistics by comparison with 9/11 are pathetic.
State Society and the Dynamics of Political Violence is the subtitle. The Foundations of Modern Terrorism is the title. Here's the cover of the book. Dr. Miller, what do you teach here at Duke?
Well, I teach this book in a course on precisely the title of it, The Foundations of Modern Terrorism. I might add, if I have a moment, to tell you that I've been teaching this subject since the early 1990s. I used to get a class of maybe half a dozen people until 9/11, and then hundreds came.
Why?
Well, I think because everyone wanted to understand suddenly what this phenomenon of terrorism was suddenly all about, because it was, as they like to say, in their face, in a way that it had not been before. I started teaching this in the early 90s after the Lockerbie crash, if you remember that, which I was invited to a conference to give a paper, which is how most academics get involved in their books. And that led me ultimately to the larger subject, which took a long time to do because I did a few other books in between. But the subject has grown increasingly important, I think, because it's now been taken up by the media and has become something that I wished would never have happened. Another thing I mentioned at the end of the book is that one of the things that has happened is that terrorism has now become a permanent part of Western civilization and its governments and its societies, which is a terrible thing to have to admit. And the other thing that is part of this is that any one of us can either become an agent for the government security services or an underground insurgent. And we really can't ever know who we can trust and who we can't trust. And that's pretty scary also. And that's the atmosphere of post 9/11. And that means that we really need to find out what this phenomenon is and how to confront it. And one of the ways that historians, I hope, can provide some help is by looking at where we came from in order to understand where we are.
Russia. We just had the Olympics, Sochi Olympics. A lot of talk about terrorism and the Iron Gate around the Olympics. What's going on in Russia?
What's going on in Russia is, again, a complex story that goes back centuries to truly understand it. Most analyses of the situation go back to Putin himself. It's even more complicated than his seemingly single-handed involvement in all this. He is not Stalin, even though I think he has perhaps fantasies of power of that sort. But this is a nationalism story. Ukraine is a divided country, always has been. It's the birthplace of everything that's actually Russian. The first Russian state was in Kiev in the 12th century. Our earliest records of Russia are, in fact, in Ukraine, what is now Ukraine. Moscow became the second capital and ultimately St. Petersburg, and then finally Moscow again over the centuries. But the involvement between Ukrainians and Russians has been extremely deep. There's hardly any difference in the two languages. The religious loyalties, are both divided and involved. It's a complicated story of both inclusion and exclusion, might be a way to understand it. If you take a vote, as this recent referendum has just shown us, of course the outcome was obvious. What's not paid attention to is that 12% of the Crimean population, which is part of Ukraine, is Tatar, which is Muslim, which is a population that was deported by Stalin during the Second World War, and they have never forgotten this. They are the population really most concerned right now about that referendum. But the overall story as to whether Putin will seek to take over control of the eastern half of Ukraine, which is all Russian-speaking and devoted to Russian nationalism, thereby severing perhaps the western part of the country, which is much more closely involved with the EU and Poland and the United States, remains to be seen.
What about the Chechens?
Well, that's a story about Russian terrorism that works on both sides and exemplifies exactly what I've been talking about.
Works on both sides?
Works on both sides.
What do you
mean? The Chechens are engaged in political violence themselves and are responsible for outrageous acts. The Russian government does its share of the same. There were a series of apartment buildings that were blown up in Moscow in 1999 when Putin was just asserting his power and taking over from Yeltsin. There is speculation still to this day, and there's documentation to at least cause concern about this, as to whether, in fact, the Russian security forces planted the bombs in those Moscow apartments in order to blame the Chechens, who are despised in Russia, as are the Roma, as are and as have been Jews and many others. So again, there's a mix here of volatile passion that I don't think we know the answers to yet.
Martin Miller, professor at Duke, The Foundations of Modern Terrorism is the book.
Access Sacramento broadcasts great speeches and interviews every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m., or you can get the podcast at greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Now, as you know, many of the players in the O.J. trial are scrambling to write books and cash in on the national publicity. So the Capital Steps have obtained an advance copy of a little-known book, Johnny Cochran's Fairy Tales. And here to present a reading from these fairy tales, please welcome the Capital Steps' own Mike Tilford.
Little Red Riding Hood by Johnny Cochran. Now, Little Red Riding Hood is the case of a wrongly accused wolf. I mean, here we are supposed to believe that a wolf could actually have made it through the woods and to the grandmother's house before Little Red Riding Hood. Ladies and gentlemen, that timeline does not fit. And are we supposed to believe that this grandmother's bonnet would actually fit this wolf? Or that this little bonnet would be an adequate disguise? I mean, how could a little bonnet actually convince Little Red Riding Hood, the woman's own granddaughter, that he, a furry brown creature living in a human-dominated society, was an elderly white woman? Ladies and gentlemen, this is an innocent wolf. And remember, if the face has fur, you must concur.
Now there's a show that combines the father of yesterday's golden age of television with the independent-minded kids of today.
That music sucks, man.
It's My Three Sons of Bitches.
Hey, Dad, I got a tattoo. Check it out.
No, I didn't say anything when you got your nose pierced, but a tattoo, Chip. Shouldn't we have discussed it?
Hey, old man, leave him alone. He had to sell a lot of drugs to raise money for that.
Now, just who do you think you're talking to, Rob?
Step down, Dad. Jeez, don't make me cap you off.
You young punk, sit down and listen to your father.
Uncle Charlie.
What?
You want me to lock you in the closet again?
No, please. No, not again.
My Three Sons of Bitches.
Hey, come on, guys. Let's go beat the crap out of Peter Brady.
Yeah, what a wuss.
Tonight, following Father Knows Jack.
Say, bud, kitten.
Shut up, old man.
I am a poor, wayfaring stranger. I have no home, and I have no rest. I am just poor. I am a poor, I am a poor, wee fairy.
I said the blues. That's all, folks.